I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, a look at a new plan to help ex-offenders stop the revolving door back to prison. And we'll talk with teachers about whether the classroom has become a battlefield. That's a little later. But first, the top military leader in Iraq, General David Petraeus, and the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, Ryan Crocker, will spend a second day on Capitol Hill today to offer their assessment of the progress of the war effort. They spent yesterday with the Senate and are due to visit with members of the House of Representatives today. We thought this was a good time to check in with a key leader in the House, Majority Whip James Clyburn, Democrat of South Carolina. We caught up with Congressman Clyburn yesterday afternoon. Thanks so much for speaking to us.
Thank you so much for having me, Michelle.
First, I understand congratulations are in order. You are receiving an important award from the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. I want to hear more about that in just a minute. I wanted to talk first, though, about the news of the day, these important hearings. Are you hearing anything different than what we heard the last time the two men appeared before Congress? I think that was in September.
Well, Michelle, I have not heard or think thing. Anything's different. It's all seemed to be a little bit more of the same. The requests seem to be more of the same. The predictions, more of the same. No end in sight. No real plan to get the Iraqis involved in running their own government, securing their own country. Just more of the same.
Do you think that the surge has been successful? For a time, it seemed that even many Democrats, like, for example, your colleague, Congressman Murtha, were saying that the surge was a success. Do you think that it has been?
Militarily, yes. Politically, no. The surge was supposed to create a climate within which the political parts of Iraq could take hold. That has not happened. There's nobody in the world who would not agree that we have the best equipped, best prepared military in the world. And so we expect for our men and women in uniform to be successful. And they have been very successful. But that's not what the surge was all about. The surge was about creating the space within which the politics could take hold.
I'm going to play a short clip from General Petraeus' opening statement. Here it is.
Since Ambassador Crocker and I appeared before you 7 months ago, there has been significant but uneven security progress in Iraq. Moreover, as events in the past 2 weeks have reminded us, and as I have repeatedly cautioned, the progress made since last spring is fragile and reversible. Still, security in Iraq is better than it was when Ambassador Crocker and I reported to you last September, and it is significantly better than it was 15 months ago when Iraq was on the brink of civil war and the decision was made to deploy additional forces to Iraq.
The bottom line is he's going to stop the troop withdrawals. How are you reacting to this news?
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I'm disappointed in that. I had hoped that we would be moving to something new. We have, and one of the reasons I think there's been an uptick in the violence or the fatalities is the fact that our men and women are tired. They are doing these 3 and 4 deployments. They are having the time extended. Just 2 days ago, I watched as some of the 218th came back to North Carolina, but they were tired. 15 months, 16 months, that's just too much.
Do you see any possibility for consensus between the two parties on a plan for withdrawal? Because presumably if you're seeing troops come home in this condition, other members have to be seeing troops come home. They have to see family members who are under the strain of these long and repeated deployments. Do you see any signs of the parties coming together on a point of view about this?
Well, I think we're just beginning to hear from the American people in a very significant way. We've had now for a good while 66% of the American people saying that they want us out of this war. Over 80% of the American people saying now that we are on the wrong track in this country. Now we saw recently over 90% of the American people blaming the Iraq war for the economic conditions that we're experiencing in this country. I think that's what it's going to take. Just because we sit here as members of the Congress, that's not going to do it. So it would seem to me that over the next few months, as this presidential campaign goes on, if things continue to bubble up from the grassroots, we will see a coming together, but not because of anything that's going on in Iraq. The American people are going to have to speak out in ways that we speak in this country, and that's at the ballot box.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Congressman James Clyburn of South Carolina. He's the House Majority Whip. He's not only the number three House leader, he's also the highest ranking African American in Congress. I mentioned that, Congressman Clyburn, because as I mentioned before, you're receiving an award from the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. Part of the reason they're honoring you is for your work in bridging the racial divide and other things that sort of keep us apart. You were a college student in South Carolina, I believe, when you met Martin Luther King Jr. for the first time. Was that an important relationship for you?
It was very transformational for me. I met him on the afternoon of October 14th. I think it was 1960, on the campus of Morehouse College. That afternoon and evening, a group of us sat up with Dr. King until 3:30, 4 o'clock the next morning. When I came out of that meeting, I had internalized his philosophy of nonviolence as a tool to effect social change in this country. And it's become a part of me. I am not a pacifist by any means, but I do employ non-confrontational tactics in order to reach a conclusion, to develop consensus. And that's the way I've conducted myself ever since. So I would say without a doubt that Martin Luther King Jr. had a profound impact on me. Every time I was in his company, you could feel that you were in the company of somebody very, very special. And I was in his company about 7 or 8 months before his assassination, his last trip to Charleston, South Carolina. I shared the stage with him. And when he was assassinated, it was a bit much for me to take. And in fact, I tell everybody that I think his assassination and a few months later, Bobby Kennedy's, is what thrust this country into a sort of a malaise or something. With politics as it relates to young people. And that's why I'm so elated to see so many young people this year seeming to shake that off and re-engage in the political process.
But, you know, you and I have talked about the presidential campaign in recent months, and you've expressed some unhappiness with the way the campaign has sometimes been conducted. You felt that, as I understand it, sometimes that race has played an unnecessary and inappropriate role in the campaign. I wonder if your concerns are ongoing, or do you feel that perhaps the temperature has been lowered a bit?
I think the temperature has been lowered a bit. I've called for the chilling out of some of the surrogates in this race, and some of them seem to have taken hold. For the last 4 or 5 days, I watched both candidates on the Democratic side. They are conducting themselves in the way that I think the campaign should have been conducted all year long. I'm pleased to see us getting to that point.
Do you think you can ever really take race all the way out of the equation?
Oh, absolutely not. Race is always an issue in this country, and it's not just on the political front. In almost everything that we do, we're often reminded, I think Martin Luther King Jr. was the first person I heard say this, that the most segregated hour in this country is 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings. And we're not talking politics on Sunday mornings. We are really reconnecting ourselves with the spirituality that's within us. And so if race is embedded in that, it is going to be embedded in everything else.
As I understand it, it was your work in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee where you began to develop this reputation that you now have as a consensus builder and as a right. power broker. I understand that you were often the one turned to help negotiate the ends of sit-ins and marches and so forth. And in Congress, I think that there's been a sort of a mood in the last couple of years that hasn't really valued consensus. It's valued kind of majority rule, so to speak. And many members on both sides of the aisle have said that there's just not an attitude of conciliation as there had been in the past. And I just wonder, do you envision a time again when consensus building will be valued as a skill?
I do. I can see it. I can feel it now. And I think that if we have the kind of presidential election that we seem to be moving towards this time around, it'll send a signal to the rest of the country that there is a new day, there is a new order, there is a new and better way of doing things. This confrontational approach that I think got started a few years back with the advent of talk radio and everything else where people make a career out of misrepresenting people's words and their intentions. I think that has worn people out in this country, and people are now looking for the best that exists in all of us and trying to build relationships upon that.
Just finally, Congressman, this is a week in which we are remembering the death of Dr. King last week, and many people are reflecting on his legacy. Obviously, I think many people would see the position you now hold as part of the embodiment of his legacy. But when you reflect upon that day and where the country is, how do you assess it? Do you see it, his dream, as being at least partially fulfilled? Do you see it as our having a long way to go? How do you think about
it? Well, I think that if Dr. King were living today, he would see in the political involvement of the young people this year, he would see in the candidacy of both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton a lot of what he dreamed about. Contrary to what he said to us in his letter from the Birmingham City Jail when he warned that the people of ill will in our society was making a much better use of time than the people of goodwill, I think he would see this year as a time when the people of goodwill started making good use of their time.
Congressman James Clyburn is the majority whip in the House of Representatives. He's a Democrat from South Carolina. He joined us from the Capitol. Congressman, congratulations again, and thank you so much for speaking with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Michelle.